And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story, the whole enchilada, the Lance Roberts Show. It's money, markets, life. Now, back by popular demand, it's the Lance Roberts Show.
And welcome this morning. It is 6:06 as we get ready to wrap up this week. It's Friday Eve. And apparently, I am told that at least in Houston, by the way. Now, I can't say this for the rest of the country, that, you know, we have listeners all over the country, which is fantastic. We love having you all here. But, you know, I do have to note that here in Houston, you know, if you're up north in the Northeast, of course, you've been dealing with another winter blast. And this weekend, I was just told, is going to be like 65 degrees, dry on Sunday. It's going to be really nice weather.
I may finally get to wash my car.
I know, right?
It's like a biohazard. It's been dirty for so long, it's growing stuff on it.
Exactly. But anyway, it is supposed to be a nice weekend, so yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to it. There's going to be some rain on and off. It did, you know, yeah. It's going to have some showers here and there, but temperature's going to be nice.
Pocahontas Phil was right.
You're not going to let me live that down, are you?
I think it was great. Brilliant.
And I told you, so yesterday we were talking about this Northeast blast that was going on. And I said, what happened with Pocahontas Phil? Apparently he was supposed to, you know, tell us the spring was coming. And I told everybody that. It's like, I was joking. I know that's not really his name. And sure enough, I got emails yesterday.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, come on, people.
Sure enough, I got emails. His name's not Pocahontas Phil.
It's a joke.
I know.
It's a punchline.
I know. There's always one.
Yeah.
You know,
I get complaints about
Jussie
Leo.
Smollett is also one.
Who?
Jussie Smollett. Apparently nobody got his joke either, including the police, who have now filed charges for filing a false police report, which is a class 4 felony, by the way.
Hey.
It was just a joke, people. Jeez.
Not.
Yeah, they didn't like it. Anyway.
Friday Eve, I understand.
Yes, it is Friday Eve, and there's a new legal issue that's brewing up. You know, we talked about the fact that as we go through these generational shifts, mm-hmm. right? You know, as baby boomers, we like to actually communicate face to face. We like to talk. We write. We actually write in cursive, which has now become an entire code language for young kids.
Might as well be Navajo.
Exactly. And then we talked about how the millennials are, you know, moving more towards texting. And then, yes. Of course, Gen Zs are now moving more towards pictures.
Yes.
They communicate better through pictures like Instagram, Snapchat, those type of things.
And we coined the word the emoji bet.
Well, and this is the interesting thing. So today there's an article out that one of the big legal challenges that are now coming up is the interpretation of emojis in legal cases.
I know
did you mean to wink at me in that particular text? What did that wink mean? You know, sometimes an eggplant is just an eggplant. That's all I'm saying. You know, but yes, so people are, so now these are, so legal, there's going to be legal battles now going on to interpret the meaning of an emoji when it's text to somebody or included in an email or some communication. And of course, you know, these emojis, you can, you know, like I said, my daughter has, you know, my son's name in her phone and it'll read his name and she's got his name with the poop emoji.
Yes.
And so it says, Tommy, a smiling pile of poo, a smiling pile of poo. Cause that's what the emoji is, yes. right? A smiling pile of poo. And well, what does that mean in court? Right. I'm offended. Is that defamation? Is it, you know, is it a joke?
It's defecation.
Go away. I'm sending you an emoji right now. And it's a hand with only one finger. What does that mean?
I'm number one.
Yes, you are. But this is the problem. This is the problem.
And 1,000 years from now, when archaeologists are serving our civilization, and they look at those emojis, they're going to go, what in the world are these people thinking?
No. No. 1,000 years from now, when people are surveilling, you know, our history.
The remnants of our civilization.
Exactly. They're going to go, There's your sign.
There's your
the reason. Yes. The reason that civilization ended right there.
It was at this point in history.
You know, the missing link has been found. Anyway, all right, look, lots of stuff going on today. Of course, big news yesterday. Two things, actually, big news yesterday. The Federal Reserve released their minutes yesterday, which was interesting because basically they said that there is a consensus among Federal Reserve members to, well, stop reducing their balance sheet by the end of this year. Now, hold on a second here. You know, the Federal Reserve took the balance sheet from $900 billion to $4.5 trillion. They've reduced it by about a couple of hundred billion is all. We're still over $4 trillion in balance sheet. So the market declines by 20% last year. And the Federal Reserve says, well, we don't really understand. Bullard, one of the Fed presidents, says, I don't really understand all the attention paid to the balance sheet. It really has nothing to do with anything. It's just, you know, as our balance sheet matures, we just kind of send the money back to the government. but as soon as the market declines by 20% and Chairman Powell comes under a huge amount of fire from the president, the White House, and, of course, the Wall Street member banks that actually own the Federal Reserve. Well, they've changed their entire tone now, no longer raising interest rates. And, of course, now, more importantly, not reducing their balance sheet. And in fact, we're going to have to get some of our Fed experts on the line. Hey, can you text Michael Leibowitz real quick, see if we get him on the line?
Yeah, sure. I'll call. Yeah.
He's going to love that because he's in New York right now. He's an hour ahead. He's probably just rolling out of bed. He'll have, like, no shower.
He's just digging out from under.
Just tell him that we don't need to Skype him. Just tell him to call in if you can find him. Anyway, but, yeah, well, he's going to love this. The other big news, of course, is that there is an outline, apparently, at this point, between China and the U.S. on resolving some of the trade agreement issues. So this is going to be kind of the big news over the last couple of, you know, it has been the big news. Of course, the market has been rallying on the expectation that we would get some type of trade deal. Well, apparently now there is actually kind of a tentative outline of what that trade resolution might actually look like. So that's been giving the markets a bit of a lift here overnight. Futures are pointing a little bit higher this morning. Not a lot. A lot of this news, the Federal Reserve as well as trade agreements, already been priced into the market. But nonetheless, it's positive news in the right direction. And so since this is Friday Eve, let's have a little bit of positive news along the way. Have a good weekend. All right, be right back after the break. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Don't go away.
Want a longer talk with Lance about your money? Request a personal one-on-one at LanceRobertsShow.com.
When traveling the road to retirement, unforeseen curves can keep you from reaching the exit lane. Join RIA Advisors for our next Retirement Right Lane class to guide you past the hazards that could delay your retirement. Saturday, March 9th at 9 a.m., meet us at the Courtyard Houston Katie Mills for coffee, kolaches, and a common sense approach to achieving and excelling in retirement. Register for our Retirement Right Lane class at RIAAdvisors.com. The class is free. The information is priceless. RIAAdvisors.com.
Where conservatives find their voice. AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. A must-have news feed for conservatives. Keep up to date on the key conservative issues with the KSEV Facebook page. From the news you need to know to the topics that KSEV listeners are talking about to KSEV events, there's a lot to like and a lot to share. Go to facebook.com/KSEV700 or find the link at KSEVradio.com. Thanks for listening to KSEV Radio. Now, join the conversation online. Facebook.com/KSEV700.
I'm good. But I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good. But I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good.
Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the only $5 meal worthy of your appetite? Wendy's Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal. Our classic Junior Bacon Cheeseburger is now bigger. With double the fresh never frozen beef and double the Applewood smoked bacon, there's nothing junior about it except the price. Wendy's Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal comes with nuggets, fries, and a drink for just $5. Get the $5 Giant Junior Bacon Cheeseburger Meal at Wendy's. Giant meal, junior price.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S., Alaska, and Canada.
And welcome back to us more 6:17. I'm driving to work. You know, again, I was talking about earlier this week. I said, I don't know what's going on. But lately, there is just a rash of new weaponry hitting the markets. We've talked about the mini nuke, a low-yield nuclear warhead. Russia has launched their drone submarine. China, stealth bombers, hypersonic weapons being developed. Another headline today. Again, I don't know if we're spiraling towards global war here or what's going on. I know there's a lot of geopolitical tension, but Six Hour, one of my favorite gun makers, I love their weaponry, just unveiled their new MPX Copperhead, which is the Army's potential next submachine gun. So there we go. I don't know. Again, I don't know what's happening here. We have military ramping up weaponry. We now have the deer zombie disease. All I'm saying is I'm ready for whatever's coming.
Got to have a copperhead to take care of all that stuff.
Apparently.
What makes Sour particularly venomous?
It works very well. Mm. It's very lethal.
I mean, it's hard.
Well, there's a whole new generation of weaponry being developed right now, kind of the next generation warfare. Mm-hmm. It's called 4G. Which is, as we're moving in that direction, you know, different, even down to redeveloping the ammo itself,
yeah,
so that it has more bang for the buck, so to speak.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. So, but yeah, I don't know what's coming between that and zombie diseases. All I'm telling you is that, you know,
I'm feeling good.
Mortgages. Earlier this week. There's a transition for you.
All you need is a pattern the size of your fist.
Exactly. Earlier this week, we interviewed Andrea Riquier. She is a journalist for MarketWatch. One of the big issues that's been going on, I've been telling you here over the last couple of months that I've sold my house, and we're living in an apartment right now and getting ready to move into a new house, you know, later on. And we're going through the mortgage process right now, and the mortgage process, because I'm a small business owner, is always very interesting. It's never cut and dried. It's fairly easy if you just got W-2 income, but because I own multiple small businesses, I have very complicated tax returns, all these K-1s, I have all this other stuff that's going on, which makes it very complicated. Of course, I also write off a lot of stuff. I take full advantage of the tax code as it's written. And so my returns are always complicated, which always makes it very difficult to go through the mortgage process. And so we're going through that process right now. And, of course, this spurred the conversation we were having about what's happening with home prices around the country and, of course, with mortgages and real estate in general. You know, we're seeing declines in real estate prices in California, New York, of course, Florida in particular, because of two things, really. There was two big changes to the housing market over the course of just the last couple of years. One of them is the fact that interest rates rose to over 3.25%, which immediately spiked up mortgage rates. And I've been saying for a while is that in an environment where people are heavily leveraged and there's very little excess capital, small changes to interest rates have a very big immediate impact on the economy. So really, we were talking about the Fed earlier. It's not surprising the Fed is pulling back on their tightening of monetary policy, because it had an immediate impact. As soon as they started doing it, the economy started slowing down. We started seeing impacts to housing, auto sales, etc. Because simply people can't afford any change to their payments because there's no excess capital to deal with. Wages haven't risen to any great degree. Yes, wages are up a little bit, but wages are about the same as they were in 1998 on an inflation-adjusted basis. So you're not making any more money, but the cost of living has gone up. So it's not surprising that there is on average about a $3,000, about $3,700 to be exact, annual gap between what people bring home and what they spend every year. And this is why it winds up on credit. And we have record high credit levels right now, right? So we have record high credit card debt, record high mortgage debt, record high blah, 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 student loan debt, etc. So not surprising. So we started talking about this, and so we thought we'd explore this a bit more, and we visited with Andrea Riccié. She is a journalist for MarketWatch. Her whole specialty is national real estate, what goes on a national basis. And so we were talking a little bit about the average fixed rate mortgage size, which is about $300,000. Of course, that makes sense. The median house price across the U.S. is the high 200s. But what's interesting is the average adjustable rate mortgage, now that's the ARM, the adjustable rate mortgage, was $700,000. So if your mortgage is $700,000 or more, that home is presumably closer actually to $1 million because you can put some money down, right? So an ARM isn't like a Fannie Mae where you put 3% down. You have to actually put some money down on the house. So you're talking about people buying $1 million homes. Anyway, she had a very good, interesting point about this. Let's go to cut 31.
If you need to get an ARM to get into a home that costs close to $1 million, what is going on in the market?
Right.
I think I called it sort of an artificial way to get in with the assumption that you will refinance later. You know, come on, everybody knows that, right? Everybody takes that for granted. But I did get some pushback on Twitter from some people in the industry who took exception to that. But right. that's very much how I see that statistic.
Yeah, no, and the reason that that's an interesting statistic is because, again, if people are using an ARM to get in the mortgage, there's a couple of things that are going on. One, they don't have the ability to qualify for a fixed rate mortgage through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, etc. In other words, the maximum size jumbo loan is about $485,000, which means that instead of financing $700,000, they just put some more cash down on the house and they just finance a jumbo through through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So, you know, it all comes back to this idea that because of low interest rates, we are able to buy more house. This is why, you know, this whole idea about low interest rates in the economy is not always a good thing. Low interest rates in an economy are a good thing to a point, but what has also happened with housing, which is, you know, one of the largest chunks of our monthly budget. I mean, ask anybody, right? You say, what's your biggest expense every month? Outside of healthcare, it's probably your house. And so, and next beyond that is paying for kids. And after that, if there's anything left over, you might be able to afford a beer. So there you go. But yeah, so for most people, this is kind of how it works. And, you know, when you have ultra low interest rates, what happened, and this is one of the big issues that led up to the financial crisis in 2008, we had all these exotic mortgages. And because of low interest rates, people would go out and say, okay, well, my budget says I can afford, you know, a $150,000 house. Well, because of low interest rates, I could actually afford the same payment and buy a $200,000 house or $250,000 house. And so, of course, what happened was is that, again, the demand for higher quality homes expanded because of low interest rates. If interest rates are at 6%, I can afford this value of a house. But at 4%, I can afford a whole lot more house. And of course, real estate agents are complicit in this as well, because you go to them and say, look, I'm looking for about a $250,000 house or a $100,000 house or $150,000, whatever it is. Well, the first house they show you is like a $350,000 house. And it's got great. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's everything you'd want in your house. And so then they go, okay, well, let's go look at the house in your butt. I just wanted to show you this. I thought it was a pretty house. I thought you'd like it. Let's go look at this other house. Well, you walk into the house that's in your price range. And all of a sudden it's like, man, this looks terrible. So she goes, well, I can get you in that other house. You know, we can do an adjustable rate mortgage. We can do this type of mortgage. We can do that. We can put, you know, we can shift it. We can do a split mortgage. We can do 80-20. You know, we can do all these, all these machinations to get you into a house you really can't afford. And so we did that. Well, of course, home builders, happy to comply with that, built higher quality homes, right? So they built higher end homes, higher value homes. And so that's caused the price value of the median home price to increase over time. And unfortunately, it's now getting to the point that has now become unaffordable for many Americans. A, they can't qualify for the mortgage because we've tightened up our lending standards. Incomes and debt levels haven't adjusted enough to allow for people to afford higher homes. And so, again, when interest rates even rise just marginally, you have a very big impact to the housing market across the board. And we've seen that. So when we start talking about watching these financial hardships, et cetera, for people, also remember that, as we've talked about before, the people that are buying homes now, right? We talk about the millennials. They're not buying houses. They're wanting to rent more. Well, you got to remember, these people watched their parents go through losing their houses in 2008. And Andrea had a really interesting point about this, about potential home buyers not willing to take that plunge into home ownership. Cut 32.
As somebody who straddles the Gen X millennial divide, I'm going to make a plug for Gen Xers as the people who got screwed the most.
She gets a blue ribbon.
Right. I closed on my first home, and like 2 months later, Lehman Brothers went kaput. You know, that was a really scary time for me. I got lucky, but, you know, a lot of Gen Xers lost a lot of equity.
Yeah.
But millennials saw what happened. That said, there's still this really intrinsic, strong American desire to own a little plot of something, right? So I don't know. I think maybe some of that will work its way out.
That entire interview is being released at 11 o'clock today. So if you go by our YouTube channel, The Lance Roberts Show, go to YouTube/Lance Roberts Show. You can subscribe there, by the way. Click the subscribe button, and we will email you all of our podcasts that we deliver every week. We do about two a week on special topics. We have interviews with some of the top minds in the country on finance and economics, markets, what's going on. So we get those to you via our direct link through YouTube. But also, you can also pick up all of our podcast and our radio show every day at our website. Simply go by LanceRobertsShow.com or RealInvestmentAdvice.com. Either one will get you the same place. Click on the podcast tab. You get all of our podcasts, interviews, radio programs, more. It's all there for you. We're going to be right back after the break. But again, grab that interview today. It's the podcast with Andrea Riquier at 11 o'clock. It'll be released. And you, again, find that on both our website and our YouTube channel, The Lance Roberts Show. We'll be right back after the break.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for Lance's newsletter now at LanceRobertsShow.com.
The new professional version of Real Investment Advice is RIA Pro, and it's loaded with the Lance Roberts proprietary stock and ETF analysis and all of the critical investment information you need, all in one place. And now you can try it out for free for 30 days. Subscribe now at realinvestmentadvice.com. Click on the RIA Pro tab and use the coupon code PRO30. That's realinvestmentadvice.com. Click on the RIA Pro tab and get 30 days free with coupon code PRO30. RIA Pro.
Offices located 1 Sugar Creek Center, Sugarland, Texas.
Have you thought about refinancing your mortgage while rates are still low? It's time to take a serious look and see what you can get. Hi, I'm Kathy with Baker Mortgage. It's not just about the rate or the payment. That alone won't tell you if it's a good deal. That's like shopping only by the APR, and that's not smart either. Your best deal is also not the one in your mailbox. Do you have credit card debt, car payments, or student loans that could be eliminated with a cash out refinance? It's not only about improving your cash flow, but stopping the bleeding on the other. Bottom line, it's just restructuring in a way that makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, we're going to tell you, just like we've been doing for 60 years. Remember, we want to help you, but we're not going to help you over a cliff. Call us at Baker Mortgage. I promise you'll be glad you did. We're at 281-313-6683. That's 281-313-MOVE, or go directly to bakermortgage.com.
Equal Housing Lender. License 263-213.
Universal Propane Grill and Light, 9106 FM 1960 West, is the barbecue kitchen and accessory headquarters. My good friend and owner, Bob Fulton, always emphasizes to me the importance of selling a great quality product, whether it's a new grill or one of the many outdoor kitchen accessories. Bob Fulton and Universal Propane Grill and Light stand behind their products and will only sell you what you need. And Universal Propane Grill and Light only carries top-of-the-line grills and kitchen accessories that are built to last. No knockoffs here that will corrode, break down, and fall apart after a few uses. They have it all, from grill heads, side burners, refrigerators, doors and drawers, and so much more. And be sure to check out all of the great grills on their showroom floor. Shop where all the grill masters go. Universal Propane Grill and Light, 9106 FM 1960 West, just west of 249. Or give Bob a call today at 281-894-8878 or visit their website, gasgrillwarehouse.com. Universal Propane Grill and Lights.
Ask any landscape professional who they depend on for professional-grade chainsaws, blowers, and trimmers, and the answer is always the same. Echo. Echo. Ask any equipment dealer for the most reliable tools on the market backed by a 5-year consumer warranty, and they'll tell you Echo. 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 So when it's time to go to work on your lawn and garden, ask yourself, don't you deserve the best power equipment money can buy? Put an Echo, Echo. In your garage. Call 800-432-ECHO or visit echo-usa.com for the dealer nearest you.
Catch Chris X Radio weekdays at 4, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
After weeks of the lamestream media condemning Trump and his supporters for yet another fake MAGA hate crime, it looks like Jussie Smollett paid a couple of Nigerians to stage his attack. You'd think they'd have learned something from the Covington kids, but no, the media's all, hide your kids, hide your wives, hide your husbands too, because they MAGA hate crime and everybody up in here.
Chris X Radio, weekdays 4 till 6, right here.
It'll be cloudy today. A few showers around, cooler than yesterday. High just 57. More showers around tonight and tomorrow. Tonight's low 52. Tomorrow's high 70. We'll have rain and a thunderstorm to start the weekend Saturday morning. Otherwise, cloudy, breezy, and warmer. The high 73. With the KSEV Weather Center forecast, I'm meteorologist Dan Baker.
So welcome back to the show this morning at 6:33. You're listening to the Lance Roberts Show. Normally, in the last segment of the show, I kind of give you the updates of kind of where things are heading to in the morning. But we're going to have Michael Leibowitz join us at 6:45. We actually drug him out of bed, threw a Pop-Tart at him. So he's getting revved up, a little bit of sugar rush going. And we'll have him here talk a little bit about what the Fed said yesterday from the Fed minutes. So I did want to give you some highlights, though, about kind of what's happening around – you know, kind of around the globe and what's to expect today. South Korean exports was released this morning. A big decline in South Korean exports. Now, why on earth does that matter, right? South Korean exports, who cares? Actually, we buy a lot of stuff from South Korea in the U.S., and there is a very, very high correlation historically between South Korean exports and the U.S. economy. South Korean exports have been plummeting over the course of the last several months, down lower again this morning. South Korean trade figures out on Thursday show exports and imports fell by the most since 2016. Exports to China dropped 13.6%. Korea's weakness means global weakness tomorrow thanks to its position as the center of many international supply chains. Japan recorded a 31.7% fall in exports to China in January. Now, those countries have nothing to do with trade wars, mind you, okay? Also coming out today, though, we've got a lot of headlines coming out today. The European Central Bank will release its minutes from its recent meetings. The Atlanta Fed's Rafael Bostic will speak about the economy. That comes out at 8 o'clock this morning. U.S. durable goods orders for December expected to rise about 1.5% from a month earlier. Expect that number to come in weak. Those numbers have been overly estimated almost every single month over the course of the last several months, so wouldn't be surprising. Particularly with a really cold winter that we've had, to see that number come in a bit weaker. Particularly look for that U.S. durable goods orders to be weaker after they extract out transportation, which is basically, you know, major aircraft, et cetera, stuff that we don't normally buy. So kind of what you're looking for is core durable goods, which is washing machines, washers, dryers, refrigerators, you know, those things that we buy on a durable basis as consumers. Jobless claims are expected out today. Again, watching that, jobless claims have been ticking up, which shows that there is some weakness in the employment sector. Also, one of the best leading economic indicators in the country in terms of predicting a recession is unemployment rates ticking up. When unemployment rate is historically have ticked up about 0.5%, that is typically preceded the onset of a recession. And we need about two more ticks on the unemployment rate to basically hit that level. So we are seeing the unemployment rate tick up. Jobless claims have been ticking up, and those are suggestive of a late-stage economic environment that is beginning to weaken. Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Survey out today, as well as IHS Markit's U.S. Manufacturing Indexes. Again, keep a watch on that because that tells a lot about what's going on with the economy. And, of course, the Conference Board's Leading Economic Indicator Index. That's the index that is comprised of just leading economic indicators that are predictive of where the economy is headed. So those are all coming out today. And of course, that is also being faced with this idea of what's going on with trade talks. This morning, we've had numerous trade lines out over the last headlines out over the last couple of weeks about trade talks, what's going on. Bloomberg was reported late last night that the two sides are working on six different memorandums of understanding. These cover agriculture, non-tariff barriers, services, technology transfer, and IP. Now, remember, technology transfer and IP are the two big hang points for these trade talks. China has no intention of giving up their IP access, technology transfers, because that is their 50-year plan for China and where they're headed. They want to become a dominant player in technology as well as a top player economically speaking. That is their goals. So one of the big hanging points on all these trade talks has been technology transfers as well as IP overall. So the details of all these memorandums of understanding are still unclear, but it's believed the agreements would include an enforcement mechanism, which would basically say that if China violates something, then tariffs are immediately applied back to China. So as soon as, theoretically, that we have these memorandums of understanding in place, they work on some deal or agreement. As soon as China violates one of those trade terms, which they are very likely to do, then immediately tariffs get reimposed and we're right back in the soup all over again. It's also worth remembering, by the way, that these, while these memorandums of understanding and these talks are all fine and dandy, two things have to happen. The first of all, MOUs are basically worthless. They're only about as valuable as the paper they're written on. The second is that whatever trade deal is done, just like we did with Iran, which, that turned out to be such a stellar agreement that we did with Iran on nuclear, has to ultimately go through Congress, get approved, and put on paper. So, there's still, even if we come to an immediate agreement, yes, tariffs may be pulled off of China on this agreement, but still there's quite a few steps that have to go through to get this in place. Reuters reported that the two sides are working on these six broad agreements that aim to resolve some of the most contentious issues of this ongoing kind of 8-month now trade war, as well as this 10-item list of shorter-term measures, largely purchase of commodities and other goods by China. Of course, China already buys a lot of our goods and services, and of course, they're just trying to increase that some more. Again, keep a watch on this because two of the big issues is that while China is in negotiations with the U.S., China has now imposed tariffs on other countries and actually banned the import and exports of goods like from Australia. So this trade war is not just between the U.S. and China. It is not isolated. There are other impacts between China and other countries that are also going on. And again, keep a watch on what's happening with the global economy because the global economy is showing signs of real weakness. In fact, today, as I was mentioning a second ago, you take a look at South Korean exports as a good example of this. But we're seeing that same impact across the Eurozone as well as other countries, seeing much weaker economic growth. And of course, while the United States has done well at this point, we are not an island in and of ourselves. So eventually global weakness does impact the U.S. And so this is why you want to kind of keep a watch of what's going on. Speaking of South Korea, by the way, Samsung just has solved Russell's problem.
What's
Well, you know, Russell Sherrill, our producer here at the station, still uses a flip phone.
Yes.
Yep. And I've been asking for years. I go, like, Russell, why don't you step on up and get you a smartphone? He goes, I like my flip phone. Well, guess what, Russell? Your problem has been solved. Samsung announced yesterday they have now come out with a smartphone that is also a flip phone.
Sweet.
And here's the best part about it. Your kids are going to love this because when it's in its folded position, it's like a smartphone, right? And then it flips out into a pad.
Ooh.
So when it folds out, you've got like, so you can watch videos or whatever you're going to do on this phone. The only bad side of this, it's $2,000.
Oh, boy.
Russell is a man of means.
He is a man of means, and he's also a man that doesn't like to be hacked, which is why he still uses his smartphone. And I don't blame him. I'm trying to figure out how to migrate my way back to Russell's to Russell's flip phone.
Life would be so much more simpler.
I'm telling you, it is. If I didn't have to answer email, if I can figure out a different way to answer emails on the go,
yeah,
I'm going back.
A robot.
We might be onto
there
something.
There you go.
Might be onto something. But yeah, $2,000 for this new phone. And here's the interesting thing. I don't know if Samsung didn't get the memo from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Apple introduced a $1,000 phone, people said, I'll keep mine. And people didn't upgrade. People are keeping their phone from two generations ago. $1,000 is a lot of money for a phone.
I predict a big market in refurbished two-year-old, three-year-old phones. You know?
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, but it's so apparently it's going to be interesting to see if now – it was interesting yesterday. Apple was knocked down the list of the most innovative companies. Apple used to be the number one most innovative company in the U.S. It's now number 17 behind a company called Stitch Fix, which is an online app to where you go on, put your measurements and style, and they send you clothes every month. So, you know, that's more innovative than Apple. I'm just telling you, that's how far down the ladder Apple has fallen in terms of innovation. And so the goal here for Samsung is to try to remain innovative. I mean, really, if you think about it, when was the last time that you bought a phone that had a really big innovation? I was like, wow, I've got to have that phone because of X, Y, or Z, right? It's, you know, now, yes, you're getting a little bit better camera, but honestly, to the naked eye, you can't tell the difference between a 10 megapixel and a 12 megapixel camera. You can't, right? You know, you can't tell the when you're talking about screen resolutions that are moving beyond the visual acuity of a human being, you're not getting a big bang for your buck. And yeah, you're paying a lot more for the phone. So if you really think about the phones, yeah, they're cool, they're new, maybe they're a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, whatever it is, a little bit thinner. But the innovation in phones has really slowed down a lot. So the question is going to be, when you're charging more and more for a phone, we're talking about $2,000 for a phone or more than $1,000 for a regular phone, not even including this new flip phone from Samsung. But when you're talking about more than $1,000 on families and households that already have a stretched financial budget, you better start innovating something really cool.
Like financing.
No, they have that already. Yeah, you buy your phone, you pay for it for like 9 years.
A telephone mortgage.
Exactly. All right, quick break, come back. Michael Lewitz will join us right after the break, talk about what the Fed said in their minutes yesterday. Dow futures pointing down now this morning, slipping even on the back of inspiring trade news. So we'll see. Maybe it was buy the rumor, sell the news type thing. We'll talk about that with Michael Lewitz. We'll come back from the break. Don't go away.
Catch Lance Roberts' podcast later at LanceRobertsShow.com.
When traveling the road to retirement, unforeseen curves, like a shift in lower distribution rates, can delay you. Join RIA advisors for our next Retirement Right Lane class to guide you past the pitfalls and potholes that could delay your retirement. Saturday, March 9th at 9 a.m., meet us at the Courtyard Houston Katie Mills for coffee, kolaches, and a common sense approach to achieving and excelling in retirement. Register for our Retirement Right Lane class at RIAadvisors.com. The class is free. The information is priceless. RIAadvisors.com.
KSEV 700 AM.
Tired of monthly TV payments? Then you should know Mr. Antenna. These guys come to your house for a one-time cost and set up an outdoor antenna that gets up to 50-plus digital channels. Plus, you get all the major local channels like ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, PBS, and more. Stop the monthly TV payments. Call Mr. Antenna at 832-674-1212. That's 832-674-1212. 1212 or visit MrAntenna.com.
Lowe's knows you do it right by looking for deals on new appliances because you work too hard for your money not to. We do it right too by saving you $600 on a GE stackable washer and dryer pair with steam cleaning. Find deals on new kitchen appliances too with up to 35% off select appliance special values on refrigerators, ranges, and more. When it's time for new appliances, do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 227. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only.
For many years, the Pine Box has been helping families gain insight into the often confusing and extremely expensive task of arranging a loved one's funeral. I have worked with Pine Box in the death of two family members because I know I can trust Chip Beresford at the Pine Box. He's the owner. To be sure that he walks me through that process and that I am prepared for the funeral, and that I get the quality I seek without breaking the budget. Because it's a very difficult thing. No one wants to feel like a cheapskate handling a funeral of a loved one. But you also can't afford to go broke either. You know, funerals are statistically the third largest expense in someone's life. The Pine Box sells the same caskets and funeral merchandise that is offered at funeral homes, but at a tremendous savings, and delivery is immediate and free within the Houston area. Visit their website, thepinebox.com, or call Chip directly at 1-888-PINE-BOX. That's 1-888-PINE-BOX. I trusted them, and you can. The Pine Box.
And welcome back to the show this morning. 6:47 on this Friday Eve. It's Thursday. And, man, are you in a treat for weather this weekend? 65 to 70 degrees, blue skies, dry. A little bit of rain going to happen tonight, tomorrow, on Saturday. Moving in further into the weekend, dry air, great temperatures. It's going to be a wonderful weekend to hang out.
I am predicting an early bluebell season.
I am, too.
Bluebonnet season.
And bluebell.
Well, I'm thinking bluebonnets, Brenham.
Exactly. Blue bonnets, you go to Brenham. You hit the Bluebell factory,
right?
And go look at bluebonnets. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, hey, by the way, speaking of beautiful, gorgeous weather, a man who lives with beautiful, gorgeous weather, Michael Leibowitz, CFA from Maryland. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Thank you for the weather report. It's always appreciated.
That was just for you, actually. He's been freezing his nuggets off. They've been having a terrible blizzard. I thought Pocahontas Phil said y'all were going to have better weather up there.
I wish. I'm hoping we're coming to the end of it, though.
Real quick, before we get to Mike, I wanted to bring Mike on to talk a little bit about what the Federal Reserve minute said yesterday, because it's a big change. It's a very interesting change about what's happening. It has a lot to say about the economy, I think, more than anything else. But I didn't want to I meant to mention this one thing in the last segment. Andrea Ocasio-Cortez and her new Green Deal, of course, one of her new Green Deal ideas is that we're going to spend a lot of government money to build trains. High-speed rail everywhere, and we're going to get rid of airplanes altogether and, you know, reduce our demand on energy, et cetera. And I just thought it was interesting because Amtrak, and I'm going to, if you're watching our live video stream, I'll just kind of hold this this chart up in front of the camera so you can see it. Amtrak just has reported their operating losses. Amtrak has never made money, ever. The only reason it's still alive is because they have a lot of friends in Congress that keep giving them money every year. If you want to save a bunch of money on our budget, stop funding Amtrak. The only people that ride Amtrak are train lovers. But Amtrak is now trying to figure out how to start curtailing some of their losses by reducing some of their long-distance routes around the country. And again, this is just between this, and we talked yesterday about the high-speed rail out in California, that complete boondoggle in California. We got a complete boondoggle trying to happen here in Houston between for the high-speed rail between Houston and Dallas. These things don't work, ever. And again, this just goes to the heart of this whole idea of the Green Deal renovation of the country and using high-speed rail to get everywhere. It doesn't work. It costs too much. You don't make enough revenue, and it winds up being a huge government expense, just like Amtrak. And out, like I said, outside of congressmen that love to have good deals with Amtrak, it's a losing money venture. Anyway, let's get to work. Michael Leibowitz. Mike, what you think?
Well, first of all, so Amtrak is interesting. Let me just comment real quick. Because here on the East Coast, the corridor between here and Boston, which includes New York, Philly, Baltimore, and D.C., is very active. And I'm guessing that line does pretty well profit-wise.
What line is that? What's the name of that line? Do you happen to know?
Metro line. There's a few different names. One's the Metro Liner. There's the Acela.
They've got them listed here. They've got all 15 of their lines listed here, and every one of them lose money. I was just trying to figure out which line that was.
It's so. Acela. Acela is one of them.
Yeah, it loses.
And that's the higher speed.
Yeah, it loses $1.8 billion
a year. Wow. So the question is, do those lines include the other areas that they go to that are right. much less frequently ridden?
Sure. And again, and it's, can you, for instance, when you talk about, shared transportation like bus lines, subways. There are areas of the countries that those work very well. New York, their subways there, their mass transit systems that work great in very crowded, condensed areas. In Houston, where we're spread out from the coastline to Austin, and it's basically right. 20 miles to anywhere you want to go, our mass transit system doesn't work at all. So, right. because we all want to drive our own cars, but that's right. the way we are in Texas. We ride our own horses. don't get on my horse. Stay on your own horse.
You know what's coming in this weekend?
It's right. It's rodeo.
The trail rides.
The trail rides come in. This is the biggest rodeo in the world that starts this weekend. And, of course, that includes the annual cook-off, which is, Mike, you need to make it down here someday, and I'll take you to cook-off in the middle of February when the weather's really nice because it'll be cold up there. Come down here and have some homemade Texas barbecue. Mm-hmm. So it is one of the big events.
But trail riders pulling horse-drawn wagons are converging on Houston from all points of the compass.
That's right.
Today and tomorrow.
Exactly.
And if you think we had traffic trouble before,
you just don't drive down. You don't drive downtown
when you get stuck behind a covered wagon.
All right. Look, let's get to what we wanted to talk about here with Mike Leibowitz. Mike and I have been talking with you in the mornings for the last several months about what's been going on with the Federal Reserve. Back in October, before the market careened lower, the Federal Reserve was saying, "Hey, we're on the process of hiking interest rates, reducing our balance sheet, kind of normalizing things, because the economy's growing, it's doing well, we've got strong labor, and inflation's rising, it's all good. So we need to back out of the system and allow the economy to operate on itself." And 2 months later, all of a sudden, not only are they not going to raise rates anymore, they're also now talking about not reducing their balance sheet anymore by the end of this year. Mike, what's your takeaway here?
So last week we wrote about Fed Governor Mester, who said it was less commentary in her tone and more factual. Mm-hmm. She said that the Fed was discussing ways in which they would end the reduction of their balance sheet, or what we know as QT, quantitative tightening. And it wasn't her statement. It was the way that she worded her statement that made it sound more like a fact that got our attention. And then sure enough, we saw the minutes from the Fed meeting in January, and it said that the context was that a large bunch of the Fed governors are in favor of ending QT by the end of the year, in the second half of 2019.
Yeah. Now, I find this interesting. It's a very interesting statement because, when we were talking, of course, quantitative easing, and this is where, the government was buying, the Federal Reserve was buying a lot of government bonds. I'll spit that out here in a second. In order to help stabilize the economy. And they were trying to do things. Ben Bernanke, then Fed chairman back in 2010, said, look, the reason we're doing QE is to lift asset prices, to inspire consumer confidence. That should help economic growth. And, and that's what we kind of saw. Then in 2013, when we were on the edge of the fiscal cliff, December of 2013,
We were looking at that moment where the 2011 debt restructuring, I'm sorry, 2012, December 2012, we were looking at the end of that debt restructuring deal. We were worried about the fiscal cliff. Ben Bernanke was worried about the impact of this $1 trillion of reduction in government spending that was going to happen because of this 2011 debt default deal. And when that occurred, he put in, you know, quantitative easing part three to a massive amount, but yet the fiscal cliff never actually occurred. So all this liquidity hit the markets, asset prices soared, and it was all great, fine, and dandy. But now we've got this massive balance sheet for the Fed, over $4 trillion still today. And the economy has shown just a very smidgen of weakness. Yeah, the market was down about 5% last year. And it looks like now that the Fed's just basically running in sheer panic in the other direction. You know, I see two problems here. One, you've never normalized your balance sheet to begin with, which means now you have less tools available to fight the next recession when it occurs. And I don't think it's really a question of if, it's just a question of when, right?
Right, right. None of this makes sense other than blaming it on the market. We had posited a week or two ago on the show that maybe they're talking at both sides of their mouth. They're talking a strong game, but at the end of the day, they would just keep doing QT, but they wanted to calm the market down. Mm-hmm. Well, in December, they said QT was on autopilot. They would keep reducing. There's no reason to even think about it or discuss it. They'll keep going. And here we are in mid-February. And yes, like you said, economic data has slowed a little bit more abroad, but a little in the United States too. And they're just going to cut it off completely, not drop the rate of reduction. You know, maybe they could go from $50 billion a month to $30 billion a month.
Right.
And say, we're going to keep it at 30 until we see the economy starting to look as strong as it was earlier last year.
Right.
But they're just going cold turkey.
Well, and so here's the question I think that needs to be asked, which is, what do they know that we don't know? In other words, yeah, we're seeing, as you said, we're seeing a little bit of slowing in the domestic economy. As I mentioned in the last segment, we're seeing unemployment rate tick up a little bit here. We're seeing jobless claims tick up a little bit. A lot of the manufacturing indicators have slowed down. Consumer confidence has weakened. Retail sales was weaker in January. But, you know, everybody's very quick to dismiss those on government shutdowns or cold winter. And there's certainly some you know, reasonable explanations why things are a little bit slower currently. But is the Fed seeing something that's even bigger than what we're seeing on the fringes? Is that maybe one of the reasons why they're backing up so quickly rather than just either pausing or just reducing the rate of their reduction?
So there's a couple of data points that came out the last 2 days that have led me to think about China a little bit more. Export growth from South Korea to China and from Japan to China has dropped significantly. Both, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but both were in a range of 15 to 20% lower.
Mm-hmm.
And those are countries that are not in trade disputes with China. Right. We are, and you would expect to see some of our exports to China decrease, which means that you would expect to see China increase exports of whatever goods that we were supplying them from countries such as South Korea and Japan.
Right.
So might it be that the Chinese economy is not just slowing down, but in big trouble?
And again, you know, this is the one idea about the Chinese economy. It's like, well, they're growing at 6%. Well, that's just what they tell you they're growing at. It could actually be a lot worse because, you know, they're a state-run economy, and so the government just tells you what you want to hear. It's not necessarily what is really going on here. You know, the markets are pointing a little bit lower this morning. Seems like the markets aren't really kind of buying into the news anyway, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But, Mike, thank you so much for your time today. Go back to eating your Pop-Tart, cup of coffee. We'll be back for tomorrow's edition of the Lance Roberts Show, of course, as always, right here on The Voice of Texas. Be sure and get by our website, TheLanceRobertsShow.com or RealInvestmentAdvice.com, either way. But most importantly, get by our YouTube channel today, YouTube/TheLanceRobertsShow, because that is where we're going to release the interview today with Andrea Riccier on mortgage markets and housing in the U.S. That comes out at 11 o'clock today. You can also catch it on our website at RealInvestmentAdvice.com. Either way, send us your questions, comments, let us know what we can do for you. Have a great day. See you tomorrow on the next edition of the Lance Roberts Show, right here on The Voice of Texas. Chris Salcedo coming up next. It's a rich man's world.